We have all been sold an incredibly pervasive lie about gamification.
Oh, absolutely. It's everywhere.
Right. I mean, for the last decade, you've been told that adding points, badges, and leaderboards to a task is like the ultimate universal cheat code for human motivation.
Yeah, the pitch is always exactly the same.
It is. It's always, you know, if you take a boring compliance module or an intense language class or even a grueling fitness routine and you just slap a digital progress bar on it.
And maybe a few virtual trophies.
Exactly. A few virtual trophies and suddenly every single person in the room will instantly lock in and engage. But the tech developers and the corporate training coordinators, they are hiding a massive fundamental variable here.
They really are. It's a huge oversight.
The software actually doesn't matter nearly as much as the personality of the human being pressing start.
It is a classic engineering blind spot. I mean, we build these pristine, perfectly coded digital environments, and we just assume that because the input is standardized, the human output will be standardized too. We completely ignore the filter that this technology actually has to pass through.
And that filter changes literally everything. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We are so thrilled to have you here with us. If you're a regular listener, you know we address you directly as the learner because, well, whether you are trying to survive a mandatory professional development seminar, or you're prepping to roll out a new agile workflow to your team, or you just, you know, want to understand the invisible psychological machinery that governs your daily life, you are here to get informed.
And today we are going to completely dismantle how you view the digital and educational systems around you.
Yeah, the material we're examining today does exactly that. What are we looking at specifically?
So we are dissecting this rigorously structured academic study. It's titled The Effect of Introversion and Extroversion on ELT Teacher Engagement with Gamified Classroom Instruction Techniques.
Okay, and just to clarify, ELT stands for English Language Teaching, right?
Exactly. But the implications of what these researchers found in those language classrooms in this study, they echo through every corporate office, every HR department, and honestly, every app on your phone.
Okay, let's unpack this. The core premise here is that gamification is just a tool. It is inert until someone actually uses it. So why do two different professionals, given the exact same software, get wildly different results?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. Like if I hand a gamified training module to manager A, the room is electric. But if I hand it to manager B, the room feels like a hostage situation.
Yeah, it's painful.
So painful. And the source material argues that the answer lies in a psychological divide we talk about all the time, but we rarely truly understand it. And that's introversion and extroversion.
Yeah, but to understand why gamification breaks down across that divide, we really first have to understand why it's so popular in the first place, specifically in the context of learning a new language.
Okay, set the stage for us.
Well, the researchers point out that gamification is utilized heavily because it attacks one of the biggest barriers to learning, which is affective anxiety.
Oh,
I
sure.
mean, when you are learning to speak English or any language, really, the fear of sounding foolish in front of your peers is just paralyzing.
It's terrifying. You mispronounce a verb, everyone stares at you, and your brain just completely shuts down. You forget everything you know.
Exactly. But when you gamify that environment, the literature shows that you create this psychological safe space to fail.
Ah, a safe space.
Right. Because in a traditional classroom, failing a quiz is punitive. It goes on your permanent record. But in a gamified classroom, failing a level just means you run out of virtual hearts and you get to try the level again.
You just hit restart.
Yeah. The student's relationship with risk fundamentally shifts from fear to trial and error.
And that makes perfect sense on paper. And I guess that is exactly why professional development programs, which we'll call PD moving forward, have universally adopted it.
Oh, they've completely bought in.
They hand a teacher a digital toolkit of game mechanics and basically say, hey, deploy this, and your classroom will magically transform into a low-anxiety utopia.
Which is the exact moment the entire system fractures.
Right, because it's not a utopia.
Not at all. Current PD frameworks treat gamification as a universal, one-size-fits-all solution. They completely ignore the disposition of the teacher who actually has to orchestrate the game.
And the study leans on some specific frameworks for this, right?
Yeah, the study we're analyzing leans heavily on established psychological frameworks, specifically the five-factor model and the iSync personality framework, to explain why this one-size-fits-all approach is a fatal flaw.
Actually, I want to pause and really dig into those frameworks because I think people casually throw the words introvert and extrovert around to just mean like shy versus outgoing.
Oh, constantly. It's a huge misconception.
Right. But structurally, Neurologically, it is about something much deeper than your party etiquette. It's about how the brain manages stimulation.
Yeah, shy versus outgoing is just a massive, incredibly limiting way to look at it. In the iSync model, the distinction actually comes down to your baseline level of cortical arousal.
Cortical arousal.
Yes. Essentially, it's how your reticular activating system processes stimuli.
Okay, let's translate that for the learner. What does a reticular activating system processing stimuli actually look like in everyday life?
Think of it like pupil dilation. If you have incredibly sensitive eyes, you don't need a massive floodlight to see the text on a page, right?
A tiny reading lamp would be fine.
Absolutely perfect. In fact, if someone turns on a floodlight, you are blinded and totally overwhelmed. That is the introverted brain.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Their neurological threshold for stimulation is very low, meaning they let in a massive amount of information per second. So a quiet, structured room is plenty of stimulation for them. A loud, chaotic room rapidly drains their battery because their brain is just processing way too much data at once.
So an extrovert is the exact opposite. They have, like, less sensitive eyes in this analogy.
Exactly. The extrovert's baseline arousal is naturally lower, so a quiet room to them feels like sensory deprivation.
It's boring.
It feels agonizingly understimulating. They need the floodlights. They need the stadium noise, the real-time collaboration, and the high-stakes social interaction just to reach a comfortable baseline of engagement.
So they draw energy from that chaos.
Yeah, they draw their energy from dynamic external environments because it feeds that neurological need for stimulation.
I was actually thinking about this when reviewing the sources. Mm-hmm. Giving the exact same gamification software platform to an extrovert and an introvert is basically like giving a high-performance sports car to a stunt driver and a city commuter.
Ooh, I like that.
Right. It is the exact same vehicle. The engineering under the hood is identical. But they're going to drive it in wildly different ways. The stunt driver is going to drift around tight corners, seeking that high adrenaline, high stimulation thrill, because that is what makes them feel alive behind the wheel.
Right. They want the noise and the action.
Exactly. But the commuter is going to optimize the route, focusing on efficiency, complex navigation, and getting from point A to point B without wasting a drop of fuel.
And critically, neither driver is using the car wrong.
No, not at all.
The vehicle is serving their specific needs. The danger, which the researchers highlight in their literature review, arises when an external authority steps in. Like, what happens if a professional development trainer with a clipboard forces the commuter to drive like a stunt driver?
You get a disaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get panic, you get blown tires, and you get someone who never, ever wants to drive that car again.
Exactly. And in the classroom, that disaster manifests as severe implementation resistance.
Right.
If a PD program forces an introverted teacher to run a loud, competitive, real-time leaderboard game, forcing them into that stadium floodlight environment, the teacher experiences acute anxiety.
And the study actually notes this often leads to superficial adoption.
Superficial adoption, yes.
That is when you just go through the motions to keep your boss happy, right? Right. Like check in the box.
It is the educational equivalent of malicious compliance.
Malicious compliance. I love that.
Right. The teacher boots up the leaderboard because the administration demands it, but the pedagogical depth of the game is completely stripped away. The teacher hates the noise, the students sense the teacher's discomfort, and the educational value of the gamification just plummets to absolute zero.
It's the commuter doing a very slow, begrudging donut in an empty parking lot just to get the trainer to go away.
Exactly.
It completely misses the point of the tool. So the researchers behind this study saw this happening. They hypothesized that this one-size-fits-all training was systematically failing based on personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a hypothesis isn't enough. They needed to prove it. They needed a laboratory.
And building a laboratory for human psychology is notoriously difficult. You have to isolate the single variable you care about, in this case, the teacher's personality, while somehow controlling for everything else.
So how did they actually pull that off? Because usually when I read studies like this, it is just a digital survey emailed to 100 random people who just click through it as fast as possible to get like a $5 gift card.
Yeah, we see a lot of those. But the methodology here was far more robust than a simple survey. The researchers set up what we might call the Tehran sandbox.
The Tehran sandbox. Okay, lay out the parameters for us.
They purposefully sampled 30 in-service English language teaching professionals from three different branches of the Safir Language Academy in Tehran.
Okay.
We're looking at 18 female teachers and 12 male teachers, ranging in age from 25 to 45, with anywhere from 2 to 15 years of actual classroom experience.
I really appreciate that demographic spread. I mean, these aren't just exhausted legacy teachers who hate all new technology, and they aren't brand new teachers who are just overwhelmed by simply surviving in a classroom.
Right. It's a solid, functional, professional cross-section,
Yep.
which provides excellent ecological validity.
Okay.
Now, to analyze this group, the researchers employed a convergent parallel mixed methods design.
Okay, let's translate that. Convergent parallel mixed methods. I know what all those words mean individually, but stringing them together sounds like a headache.
It is entirely researcher jargon for saying they didn't just want to look at a spreadsheet of numbers and they didn't just want to read a diary of feelings.
They wanted both.
They wanted both simultaneously. They collected hard, quantifiable data, the numbers, and deep personal narratives, the qualitative interviews, at the exact same
Well,
time.
that's smart.
Then they layer them over each other because the numbers prove the scale of the behavior and the personal narratives explain the why behind that behavior.
So, step one in the sandbox was sorting the players. They used the iSync personality questionnaire revised, specifically the extroversion-introversion subscale, to categorize these 30 teachers. And the split was almost perfect, right?
Yeah, 14 introverts and 16 extroverts.
And before they introduced any gamification, the researchers ran preliminary statistical tests to ensure these two groups were equivalent in terms of age, gender distribution, and teaching experience.
Which is absolutely crucial.
Because otherwise the data is skewed.
Exactly. It means if we see a difference in how they teach later, we know for a fact it isn't because the extrovert group just happened to have 10 more years of experience. The playing field was entirely level.
Okay, so then comes the intervention. All 30 teachers were put through an identical, mandatory 2-week professional development course on gamification for communicative language teaching. They read the same theory, they were shown the exact same game models, and they were handed the exact same digital toolkit.
And following that training, the researchers initiated a 6-week observation phase. The mandate from the administration was simple. Every teacher must implement at least one gamified activity per week in their actual live classrooms.
And the surveillance on this was intense. Let's break down the three distinct tracking tools they used because they didn't just take the teacher's word for it at the end of the 6 weeks.
Right. So first, they used a gamified instruction observation checklist. This was the objective measure. Trained observers physically sat in the classrooms twice during the 6-week period. They recorded exactly what the teachers were doing, categorizing the activities as either primarily social competitive or primarily cognitive reflective.
That's the hard data. And the second tool.
Second was the subjective measure. The teachers had to submit weekly digital logs.
Like a diary.
Exactly. This tracked how they felt in the moment. It measured their personal comfort, their enjoyment, and how engaged they perceived their students to be using a standard 5-point scale. It also asked open-ended questions about, what was frustrating them that week.
And finally, the deep dive measure.
Yes. Post-observation semi-structured interviews. After the 6 weeks concluded, the researchers sat down for 30 to 45 minutes with every single teacher. They recorded and transcribed these conversations verbatim to really map out the internal psychological planning processes that the numbers couldn't show.
So we have a perfectly controlled environment. If both groups were given the exact same toolkit and the exact same mandate to use it once a week, where did the first crack in the system appear? I mean, did one group just flat out refuse to participate?
No, it wasn't a refusal at all. The initial divergence was a massive explosion of sheer volume. The data immediately shattered the assumption that these teachers would behave similarly.
In what way?
The extroverts didn't just meet the baseline requirement, they completely overran it.
Okay, let's look at the hard numbers for the extroverted group then. The mandate was one game a week,
Right?
but the extroverted teachers used gamified activities an average of 4.2 times per week, and the introverted teachers averaged 2.9 times a week. I mean, the extroverts are deploying the software almost 1.5 times more often every single week.
That frequency difference is statistically significant, but the more telling metric is the effective bump.
The emotional side.
Yeah. On that 5-point scale, tracking comfort and enjoyment, the extroverts reported a 0.63 point higher score than the introverts.
Which sounds small, but on a 5-point scale.
In the realm of psychological self-reporting, A 0.63 difference on a 1-5 scale is an enormous gulf. It indicates that the extroverts weren't just using the tool more, they were fundamentally thriving while using it.
But to understand why they were thriving, we have to look at the observation checklist. Like, what exactly were they building 4.2 times a week?
Well, the researchers documented 147 distinct gamified activities across the whole study. And when they isolated the extroverted teachers, a staggering 78.3% of their activities were categorized as social competitive.
Wow, almost 80%. So they were building arenas, team quizzes, real-time leaderboards projected on the wall, group quests where students are physically standing up, shouting out answers, and racing against a clock.
Yes, very loud, very active environments.
There is a quote from the qualitative interviews from an extroverted teacher coded as teacher E5 that perfectly captures this environment. They said, "The biggest win is the laughter and the teamwork. It breaks down barriers you can't get through with a worksheet."
It's a great quote.
I love the visual of that. The laughter breaking down the barrier. But, I have to admit, I have a bit of skepticism here, and I imagine someone listening who manages a team or designs curriculum might share it.
Let's hear it.
Laughter and high energy are great, but is that actually teaching? I mean, if I walk into a classroom and see students throwing a foam ball around while screaming at a leaderboard, it looks like a sugar rush.
It looks chaotic.
Yeah. It looks like the teacher is just throwing a party to mask the boring, difficult work of teaching past participle verbs. What is the actual pedagogical value of that chaos?
That is a very natural assumption, but it really looks at rigor through a purely traditional, antiquated lens. To understand why that chaos is deeply pedagogical, we have to introduce another psychological framework that the researchers utilize, which is self-determination theory.
Okay, I know the broad strokes of self-determination theory, or SDT. It was developed by Dessine and Ryan, right? And it essentially says people need to feel in control to be motivated. But how does that justify a foam ball party?
So, SDT is a macro theory of human motivation. It argues that for a human being to achieve intrinsic motivation, meaning doing something because it is inherently rewarding, rather than just doing it to avoid a punishment, three fundamental psychological needs must be met.
And those are autonomy, competence, and relatedness.
Exactly.
Let's break those down really quickly. Autonomy means I have a say in my actions. I am making choices, not just following orders. Competence means I feel capable. The task is challenging, but I have the skills to conquer it. I'm not just flailing. And
relatedness.
Relatedness is the critical one here. It is the deep psychological need for a sense of belonging, social connection, and meaningful interaction with others. Now let's map that onto the extroverted teacher's brain.
Okay.
For an extrovert, a noisy, highly interactive, competitive, gamified classroom is an exquisite delivery system for relatedness.
Because they're feeding off the room. Precisely. The game isn't a distraction from the learning. The game is the engine powering the motivation to learn. The students are interacting, forming teams, feeling that social bond. The laughter and teamwork is the pedagogy because it satisfies that psychological need for relatedness.
Oh, I see. Which then unlocks their intrinsic motivation to tackle the actual English syntax embedded in the game.
Exactly.
So the extroverted teachers instinctively gravitate toward these social competitive games because it aligns with their own neurological need for high stimulation while simultaneously fulfilling their students' psychological need for relatedness. It's like a perfect feedback loop.
It is a brilliant synergy. However, it is not without a significant qualitative challenge.
There's always a catch.
Always. The data showed that the extroverts consistently struggled with one massive issue, and that was classroom management.
Which totally makes sense. If your entire teaching model relies on revving the engine of a room up to 1,000 RPMs, the risk of the engine exploding is very real. The extroverts noted in their weekly logs that managing this energy was physically exhausting.
Yeah, Teacher 11 summarized it perfectly in their interview. They said, "The challenge is riding the wave of excitement but not letting it crash. You have to be a great traffic cop."
Traffic cop. That is such a good way to put it. You are standing in the middle of a four-way intersection of chaotic human energy, just blowing the whistle, trying to direct all that momentum toward the learning objective without causing a pileup.
I'd ask you, the learner, to think about the best manager you've ever had or your favorite high school teacher. Think about the ones who always seemed to be improvising, the ones who thrived on flexible, unpredictable interactions. They were likely acting as what we might term engagement catalysts.
Engagement catalysts.
Right. Teacher E3 even said in the study, the energy is the feedback. They are using their extroverted traits, magnified to the gamification software, to spark a chemical reaction in the room.
It's an incredibly effective way to engage a group, provided you have the specific battery required to power it. But that brings us to the other half of the data. Because if the extroverts are using this tool 4.2 times a week and thriving, what is happening with the introverts who are only using it 2.9 times a week?
Right.
The immediate assumption from a middle manager looking at a spreadsheet is the introverts are failing. They're resisting the training. But here's where it gets really interesting.
The most vital paradigm-shifting takeaway from this entire deep dive might be this single point. The introverts were not failing to engage. They were engaging in a fundamentally different dimension.
And the researchers proved this by measuring something called the Cognitive Complexity Index, or the CCI.
Yes.
Instead of just counting how many games the teachers played, they measured the structural depth, the strategic requirements, and the logic pathways of the games they were actually designing.
The CCI is scaled from 0 to 1. The extroverts, for all their high-energy, high-volume social games, scored an average of 0.29 on the Cognitive Complexity Index.
Okay, 0.29.
Their games were fun, but structurally simple. The introverted teachers, on the other hand, scored an astoundingly high 0.71.
Wait, 0.71 versus 0.29. Let's linger on that, because that isn't a rounding error. That is a completely different universe of design.
In statistical terms, the difference is monumental. The researchers calculated the effect size using a metric called Cohen's D, and it came out to 2.49.
Okay, for someone who hasn't taken a statistics class in 10 years, what does an effect size of 2.49 actually look like in the real world?
To give you context, an effect size of 0.2 is considered small, 0.5 is medium, 0.8 is considered a large effect. A 2.49 effect size is astronomical.
Oh, wow.
It is like comparing the average height of a human being to the average height of a giraffe. The two data distributions barely even overlap. It proves definitively that introverts and extroverts are operating in entirely different paradigms of software utilization.
So if the introverts aren't building real-time team quizzes to score a 0.71, what exactly are they building?
The observation data revealed that 63.4% of the activities implemented by the introverted teachers were categorized as cognitive reflective.
Meaning what?
We are talking about intricate logic puzzles. We are talking about asynchronous reflection points where students work alone. We are talking about deep branching narratives where a student makes a choice, and that choice alters the rest of the storyline, requiring them to constantly calculate their path using English syntax.
So they weren't avoiding the gamification platform at all. They were using it to build complex, quiet architectures.
Exactly.
There is a fantastic quote from teacher I9 that illustrates the goal here. They said, "The real value is it makes them think strategically in English. They're applying logic, not just memorizing."
Which is exactly the kind of deep internal processing that an introverted mind values, understands, and actively seeks out.
Going back to our earlier analogy, if the extroverts are using the toolkit to host a flashy, high-decibel television game show, the introverts are using the exact same toolkit to meticulously craft a brilliant locked-door escape room.
That is the perfect distinction. I mean, the game show host needs the audience cheering, the buzzer sounding, and the lights flashing to feel that the game is a success.
Right.
But the escape room designer wants you to sit in a quiet room, stare at a sequence of cryptic numbers, and suddenly experience that quiet, profound internal click of solving the puzzle. Both are games. Both deeply satisfy the requirements of gamification. But they offer fundamentally different experiences of learning.
And the researchers explain why introverts instinctively gravitated toward the escape room model by using trait activation theory, or TAT. Let's explore how TAT explains this divide.
Sure. So trait activation theory suggests that our personality traits aren't always actively visible. They are dormant potentials that get activated by specific situational cues in our environment.
Give us an example of that.
Let me give you a non-digital example. If you walk into a massive, echoing cathedral or a quiet library, the environment itself provides cues that activate quiet, reflective, reverent behavior.
You naturally whisper.
Exactly. But if you walk into a packed sports stadium, the environment cues loud, expressive, aggressive behavior.
Okay, so map that onto the digital environment of the PD software.
When the teachers sat through that two-week training and looked at the gamification dashboard, they perceived entirely different environmental cues based on their neurology. The extroverts saw the leaderboard feature and the countdown timer, and their social competitive traits were instantly activated.
It cued the stadium behavior.
Yes. The introverts looked at the exact same dashboard, saw the branching narrative feature and the custom logic pathways, and their reflective, structured traits were activated. It cued the library behavior.
The study actually makes a point that introverts demand this structural alignment. Teacher I7 stated, "I need a clear blueprint. The game mechanics must be a direct vehicle for the learning goal, or it feels like a distraction."
That is the crux of the introvert's motivation. If the gamified activity is just noise for the sake of noise, like, you know, throwing a foam ball to pick who answers a multiple choice question, it is rapidly draining and highly aversive to them.
The juice isn't worth the squeeze.
Exactly. But if the activity is a complex puzzle where solving the puzzle inherently requires understanding English grammar, they are fully, deeply engaged.
But just as the extrovert struggled with being the traffic cop, the introverts faced a massive hurdle of their own. The researchers termed it the design and assessment burden. And this burden completely explains that frequency gap we talked about earlier.
It really does. Building a flawless escape room requires infinitely more backstage labor than hosting a trivia game.
Imagine you are that introverted teacher. It's 10 p.m. on a Tuesday. The house is finally quiet. You have spent the last 4 hours writing and coding a branching narrative text adventure where your students have to use proper past tense English to navigate out of a virtual haunted house.
Sounds exhausting.
It's brilliant. It is cognitively demanding. But tomorrow, when your 30 students play it, they're all going to take different paths. You now have to assess 30 unique logic strings to see if they actually learned the grammar.
And meanwhile, the extroverted teacher next door just threw a ball at a whiteboard for an hour, logged it as a gamified activity, and went to sleep at 8 p.m.
Exactly. I mean, listen to the frustration from teacher I-14 in the interviews. They said, "Designing a good puzzle that's also a language task takes hours. And then, did everyone learn, or just the quickest thinker? The burnout here isn't coming from a lack of caring. It is coming from the invisible, crushing weight of deep, complex work."
And that answers the ultimate question of the frequency data. Why did introverts only use the tool 2.9 times a week? Because it is structurally, temporally impossible to build a cognitively complex branching narrative logic puzzle 4 times a week.
You'd never sleep.
You wouldn't. The lower frequency was not a symptom of disengagement. It was the direct byproduct of the incredible depth of their engagement.
Okay, let's step back and look at the whole board. We have completely synthesized these two distinct operational worlds. On one side, we have the engagement catalysts, the extroverts riding the wave of social energy, prioritizing relatedness and real-time feedback. On the other side, we have the depth architects, the introverts meticulously crafting complex asynchronous logic puzzles, prioritizing cognitive rigor and structural alignment. Both of these profiles are incredible assets to a student's learning journey.
Absolutely. They offer beautifully complementary pedagogical benefits. If you want a student to feel comfortable speaking out loud, you need the catalyst. If you want a student to understand the deep structural mechanics of a language, you need the architect.
So what does this all mean? What happens when a massive school system or a Fortune 500 corporate HR department or a Silicon Valley tech developer treats these two drastically different psychological profiles exactly the same?
Based on the empirical data from the Tehran sandbox, the study definitively rejects the null hypothesis.
Which means?
There is absolutely zero evidence that introverts and extroverts experience gamified technology in the same way. The perception and utilization are entirely heterogeneous. Yet the standard professional development courses sweeping the globe right now universally ignore this reality.
And the tragedy is, these standardized pieces of training unintentionally but aggressively favor extroverts. Why is the deck stacked?
It comes down to how corporate and educational cultures traditionally define words like engagement and active learning. If you look at the syllabus for almost any modern training program, it is designed around live simulation, real-time collaboration, standing up in front of the room, and presenting your results loudly to your peers.
They're designed by extroverts for extroverts. The visible metrics of success are volume and motion.
Precisely. It is a profound systemic failure. Imagine an introverted professional sitting in that training. They are presented with a PD course that only highlights highly social, competitive models of gamification.
Like the game show host model.
Yes. The trainer points to the game show host model and says, "This is what success looks like." The introvert looks at that and experiences immediate anxiety. They think, "I can't do that. That exhausts me. Therefore, I must be bad at gamification. I might be a bad teacher."
Oh, that's rough.
They internalize the structural failure as a personal deficit. So they underutilize the tool, or they resist it with that superficial, malicious compliance we discussed earlier.
It is really heartbreaking because they have this immense, untapped potential to be incredible depth architects, but the training manual never even acknowledged that their way of building was a valid option.
And we shouldn't pretend the failure only hurts the introverts. The extroverts are being failed too.
How so?
Because they are rarely trained in strategic, reflective methods, they completely miss out on gamification's potential to drive advanced metacognitive problem solving. They keep throwing parties, missing the opportunity to occasionally challenge their students to sit in the quiet and think deeply.
We basically grading fish on their ability to climb trees.
That is an incredibly apt comparison. If your institution's only metric for successful software implementation is how loud is the room and how many leaderboards are active, you are failing the introverted professionals. You are standing with a clipboard, grading the fish on tree climbing, and completely ignoring their masterful ability to navigate the crushing depths of the ocean.
Learner, I really want you to connect this dynamic directly to your own life, your own office, your own daily routines right now. Think about the last time a major new software platform, a new managerial style, or a new agile workflow was forced upon your team. Think about sitting in that mandatory Zoom meeting. If you struggled with it, if it felt unnatural, exhausting, or profoundly irritating to you, was the tool broken? Were you broken? Or was the tool simply designed for a completely different neurological threshold?
It is a profoundly liberating realization when you finally understand that your resistance to a new workflow might not be incompetence or stubbornness, but simply a trait mismatch.
If you are an introvert and your company rips out the cubicles and forces you onto an open plan floor plan with constant real-time instant messaging pings, shared digital whiteboards, and public leaderboards for ticket resolution, you aren't failing at your job. The environment is actively failing your psychological traits.
It's blinding you.
Yeah. It is blinding you with stadium floodlights and then asking why you can't read the spreadsheet.
And the research demands that institutions wake up and recognize this. If the current monolithic system is broken, we have an obligation to fix it.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of this deep dive. The researchers didn't just dump a pile of depressing data on us and walk away. They provided empirical synthesis and highly practical implications. They built a roadmap for how to rebuild the matrix.
The core recommendation derived from the data is that the future of professional development, the future of corporate training, and frankly, the future of software design must be modular.
Modular.
The single-track pipeline has to be demolished.
The study lays out two distinct proposed pathways for training. Let's look at pathway one, which is for extroverts. If we know their baseline is acting as an engagement catalyst, how should we actually train them to use gamification?
The training for extroverts needs to lean into their high arousal strengths while aggressively mitigating their management weaknesses. They don't need to be taught how to generate energy. They already know how to do that.
Right.
They should receive targeted training on structuring social games. Critically, their PD must focus on techniques for managing classroom chaos, how to tweak flexible digital frameworks on the fly without ever losing sight of the underlying educational objective.
To teach them how to be the most effective commanding traffic cop possible.
Exactly. Teach the stunt driver how to control the drift so they thrill the audience without crashing the car into the wall.
I love that. And then we have pathway two. For introverts, their training manual should look completely different.
Training the depth architects.
Right.
Their professional development should heavily consist of structured asynchronous modules. They should be trained on narrative-based exploration. Teach them the software mechanics of coding branching logic scenarios. Show them how to develop complex, multi-layered digital puzzles.
And what about that assessment burden?
Crucially, because we know their main psychological hurdle is the assessment burden, they need highly specific training on how to efficiently assess and grade individual student learning within those massive asynchronous digital tasks. Give them the tools to automate the grading of the escape room so they can actually focus on designing the next one.
So teach the commuter how to optimize the engine, tweak the aerodynamics, and map the most efficient, brilliant route possible. I love this concept of the researchers basically advocating for strength-based framing.
Yeah.
Let's linger on strength-based framing, because I think if this was actually implemented, it would be revolutionary. What if schools, what if corporate HR departments just entirely stopped trying to force introverts to act like extroverts?
It would fundamentally alter the landscape of work and education as we know it. I mean, if we stopped viewing introversion as a defect to be cured with mandatory team-building exercises, and instead embrace the engagement catalysts and the depth architects as equally valid synergistic roles within a single organization, the outcomes would be spectacular.
Just imagine a customized curriculum built on this premise. Imagine you are trying to learn a wildly complex subject coding, a new language, advanced calculus. On Monday, you walk into a classroom run by an extroverted teacher. They introduce the raw concepts using a high-energy, team-based leaderboard game.
The room is buzzing.
The energy in the room is buzzing, social barriers are broken down, everyone is laughing, shouting out answers, and the effective filter, that paralyzing fear of failure, is completely obliterated.
And then on Wednesday, you return to the material, but you are handed off to an introverted teacher. They take that raw enthusiasm generated on Monday and channel it into a deeply reflective, asynchronous story branching simulation. You sit quietly with your laptop. You process the information deeply. You solve complex, individualized logic puzzles at your own pace that permanently solidify the grammar and syntax you were briefly introduced to on Monday.
It's the perfect educational matrix. You get the social cohesion, the adrenaline, and the motivation from the extrovert. And then you get the cognitive complexity, the rigorous assessment, and the strategic depth from the introvert. But you only unlock that superpower if the administration recognizes, respects, and trains those professionals according to their distinct, unalterable psychological profiles.
If we connect all of this back to the bigger picture, the grand takeaway of the Turan study is a warning about how we view the digital tools we are building. Technology is never neutral.
Never.
A gamification platform is not an unbiased universal object. It is always inevitably filtered through the messy, complex reality of human psychology. The software is just the application. The human personality is the ultimate operating system.
The human personality is the ultimate operating system. That is the absolute perfect way to encapsulate this entire journey. Okay, learner, it is time for us to wrap up this deep dive.
We have covered a massive amount of psychological and statistical ground today.
We really have. Let's do a quick, concise synthesis of the knowledge we've unpacked. Gamification, the implementation of points, badges, and narrative quests, is a wildly powerful tool for driving human motivation. But the rigorous data from the Turan study definitively proves that its success is entirely dependent on the neurological disposition of the person running it.
Right. Extroverts, our engagement catalysts, wield it to build social cohesion, provide real-time feedback, and generate high classroom energy. Introverts, our depth architects, wield it to build cognitive complexity, craft reflective puzzles, and demand strategic depth.
Neither approach is superior. Both are absolutely essential for a holistic learning environment. But standardized, one-size-fits-all training that forces one psychological profile to mimic the other benefits no one. It is a systemic trap that leads directly to anxiety, burnout, superficial compliance, and the tragic waste of human potential.
Exactly.
Now, before we sign off, we always like to leave you with a final provocative thought, something to mull over while you're commuting, doing the dishes, or staring at your phone tonight.
We have spent this entire deep dive analyzing how teachers and managers filter tools through their personalities. But consider the digital technology you use every single day.
Your project management software at work. Your fitness trackers, your daily language apps.
Look closely at them and ask yourself, are you truly using those tools the way the developer designed them to be used? Or have you secretly, instinctively hacked them to fit your own introverted or extroverted neurology?
That's a great question.
Right. Do you use your fitness app to compete in loud, public, global leaderboards to trigger your extroverted need for relatedness? Or do you ignore the social features entirely and use it as a private, highly structured, reflective journal of your own complex metrics?
And take that thought one critical step further into the near future. As artificial intelligence begins to algorithmically design our learning environments and our corporate workflows, as AI starts generating our daily tasks, will those algorithms be sophisticated enough to recognize these deep psychological differences?
This is a scary thought.
Will the AI know if it's managing a depth architect or an engagement catalyst? Or will it just lazily optimize for the loudest, most easily measurable metrics of engagement and slowly lock us all into an invisible, one-size-fits-all digital cage?
It is a question that developers, educators, and every single one of us are going to have to answer very, very soon.
You know, usually when a new piece of technology drops, we expect cold precision. We expect input to equal output. But as we have explored today, as long as there is a human being pressing the button, the beautiful, complex, muddy waters of psychology will always dictate the final result. To you, the learner, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to explore these vital multiple perspectives with us today and for doing the deep necessary work of getting truly informed. Keep questioning the digital systems around you. Keep looking for the hidden psychological frameworks in your office. And remember, there is always more to learn. See you next time.